I just learned Discover credit cards do something pretty awesome. At the end of your first year, they automatically double all the cash back you've earned. That's right. Everything you've earned, doubled. All the cash back from eating at your favorite soup dumpling restaurant, doubled. All the cash back from that trip where you sort of learned to snowboard, also doubled. And the best part, you don't have to do anything ridiculous to get it. Nope. Discover does it automatically. Seriously, though, see terms and check it out for yourself at discover.com/match.
This is The Rich Eisen Show with guest host Kirk Morrison.
Let's start this program with
Wyndham Clark's mother, before she passed, had a mantra of play big. Wyndham Clark has played bigger than the biggest names of the game.
Live from The Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Earlier on the show,
Raven safety Marlon Humphrey.
Coming up,
golf and college football writer for The Athletic, Brody Miller. Titans defensive tackle, Jeffrey Simmons. And now, sitting in for Rich, it's Kirk Morrison.
Yeah, hour number two right here on The Rich Eisen Show. Kirk Morrison filling in for Rich. I still got my golf polo shirt on, and I'm rocking it today. I'm trying to get some swings in a little bit later because you're always coming off of a big weekend like that, the U.S. Open. You always feel like I can go out and play just like some of the pros, and that is just not the case. Saw some unbelievable shots this past weekend, just the atmosphere of being there, and I know I got a lot of work.
Oh, absolutely. I played on Saturday as well. Mm-hmm. Nothing makes you want to go play, if you're a golfer.
Yes, sir.
Nothing makes you want to go play golf more than watching one of these big-time tournaments, the Masters, the U.S. Open. It's just, I need to get out and swing right now. I know I can't hit a 280-yard, cut,
yes,
5-wood like Wyndham Clark did. But, unreal. I can get out there and still kind of hack it up and have a good time. And I'm going to go to the range today. I'm playing on Wednesday.
Nice.
I just got to work some stuff out because maybe one day I'll break 80, Kirk.
Yeah,
break 80. Maybe one day.
Yeah, I'm just trying to I'm trying to get there. If I break 80, just don't talk to me no more.
Oh, it's over.
It's over, yeah. Yeah. I'm going to get a card right there.
You can get like a t-shirt that says, like the golf course should literally hand out sweatshirts or little mini trophies like you used to get in t-ball. Like, I broke 80 today.
Broke 80.
Leave me alone.
I'm telling you, somebody listening is going to get that shirt. And maybe already out there already. Somebody talking about, I broke 80. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
But, it's part of this, I always say this season of, we just had, like I said, the NBA playoffs are now done with. And you're like, man, remember, we could have had a game 7 if necessary yesterday. How cool would that have been?
It would have been kind of awesome. Actually.
That would have been cool because you would have had, hopefully, an early game 7 that would lead you into the, the final round of the U.S. Open, which would have been pretty cool. Two big, huge events going back to back. And yet we didn't have to worry about that because the Nuggets took care of business in a gentleman sweep. And then the videos of Nikola Jokic at the at his horse racing events he likes to go to.
Oh, is that what happened? I totally missed those.
Yes. He was at his horse racing
events. I was watching clips of him in Vegas. Jokic drunk in Vegas, like drunk Michael Malone at the parade.
I'm just like.
And hold on. Maybe I missed this. What was LeBron talking about? Would Michael Malone call him out at the parade or something? Because I
did.
Completely missed all of that.
Oh, so this is the gossip.
I didn't understand what LeBron was like. Shadow Instagram.
Whenever you like miss out on something, just go to NBA Twitter. NBA Twitter will let you know what's going on. They keep you all the way. So what happened was pretty much Michael Malone says, "Hey, I know we just won a championship, but I'm gonna let you guys know. I might be retiring at the end of this."
Oh,
and
that's
so
what
they
know.
Took
so
the
he,
jab
oh,
and LeBron.
LeBron was
so I guess I'm living rent free in your mind and all
and
that
then
stuff.
Someone during the parade when they introduced him as the Lakers daddy.
The Lakers daddy too. Yeah,
Well, they did sweep the Lakers.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but that's why it's why LeBron is like, I see, you're talking about me like that.
He was talking about the Lakers. I mean,
well, they took care of business and the Denver Nuggets gave us a weekend in which I could just concentrate on golf and not have to worry about a possible game seven between the Miami Heat and the Denver Nuggets. So I focused on the U.S. Open, 4 days of the U.S. Open at the great Los Angeles Country Club, right in the heart of Los Angeles. And somebody who was covering it as well is Brody Miller, the golf and college football writer for The Athletic. You can reach him on Twitter at Brody A. Miller. I'll just start right here, Brody. Your thoughts on the U.S. Open, the 123rd edition, we'll get to the winner in a second, but just your overall thoughts and pictures of what this year's U.S. Open looked like.
Yeah, of course, and thanks for having me. It was a very strange week. I mean, I think this was probably one of the most anticipated, exciting U.S. Opens in a long time because everyone was excited to see this course that was always so well thought of and, you know, highly rated, but no one had ever really seen, let alone on television. And it obviously has been, all things considered, a disappointing week. You know, I think it was you start with two guys able to shoot a 62 on Thursday, kind of got things off to a rough start. Then you add in the just kind of strange crowd vibes. And at first, I think they were getting credit for the fact that it was only 22,000 people there, but then I think as the week went on, it was just, you realize as more information comes out that the overwhelming majority of those went to members and the club to hand out, and only a smaller amount were for, you know, just normal GA people, and that's where most of the excitement comes. That's where most of the buzz is coming from. And then, you know, they didn't allow a lot of grandstands and fans around the 18th green and 9th greens because they, you know, I think they wanted the clubhouse to be the background. Well, that's where you need most of the excitement. And so it just felt empty and awkward on the biggest hole of the course. So it was a very weird week. And I think the scoring conversation is an exhausting one, but one that I'm always happy to have, because I think that did end up finishing a round where you won it. I do think the final scores were pretty tough and competitive and par golf. But as an overall event, you know, you hear a lot about battling between the USGA and LACC. I just think it was a stressful, weird week, and I'm going to be really interested to see if they really follow through and have it here again in 2039.
Yeah, I saw that. They'll be back around here in 2039 when hopefully the LACC is in rotation. But Brody, when it comes to the winner, Wyndham Clark, a guy who had just had one PGA Tour victory coming into the U.S. Open, and he walks away as the champion, battling toward the end and then sinking a putt to keep Rory McIlroy from getting his first major in, like, what, 8-9 years? What do we know about Wyndham Clark now? Where is this taking us? Is this the PGA Tour's new star?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know if I go as far as new star, but I do think he's a guy who is here to hang around. You know, he's not going to be just one of those random, you know, major winners that we right. get every few years and you're just like, remember that? I think he's going to be around. He's going to win more tournaments. I don't know if he's going to become a star, but he's fascinating because I mean, 3 years ago, he was not even in the top 200 golfers in the world. I mean, he was a really big amateur prospect and dealt with the loss of his mother and dealt with some struggles there. Got his PGA Tour card. And, I mean, just flat out was not good. I mean, it was like he missed, like, 7 cuts in a row at one point, and he was not even in the mix, and he made some changes in the last 2 years, and it's kind of quiet, right? I don't expect everyone to know his name, but he has quietly been one of the better golfers in the world the last, you know, 12 months probably, you know, and he won the Wells Fargo, which was an elevated event that's against the best guys in the world. He's been, you know, raking in top 10s and top 20s at pretty big tournaments, and it's like, you know, I'm not saying he's some star, but he is, you know, in the FedEx Cup rankings and things like that. Like, he was a top 10, top 15 guy this season. So it's not like this came out of nowhere. I don't know if he's going to be, you know, some great guy for the next 10 years, but people should get to know him because the year he's having right now with these two massive wins, he's probably going to be playing on the Ryder Cup this fall. Like, that feels very, very likely at this point, probably assumed. And, you know, he's a fascinating guy because he has dealt with all those things. He has dealt with loss and struggle and just kind of, he said he was ready to quit golf multiple times, just kind of hopping in the car, driving, not knowing where to go. And I think that's what makes this such a cool story is that as much as I think golf, we all want stars to win the big events, it's kind of cool to have a guy who, I don't know, just went out and earned it when other guys couldn't.
That's a great point there. Speaking with Brody Miller, golf and college football writer for The Athletic. You mentioned it there. We're all about the stars, right? And I had a chance to be at LACC, and you know, you're watching the Schefflers tee off. You're watching, you know, obviously Ricky Fowler and Rory McIlroy and some of the greats. Who do you think was more of a disappointment this week? Was it Rory not getting that next major, or Ricky Fowler, who's playing in Southern California near a lot of his hometown fans, and both guys just come up a little bit short?
Yeah, right, because Rory is like, that's the answer, because Rory, I mean, people have just, it's so bizarre that he is, what he is doing in majors year in, year out, the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years,
yeah,
is out of this world. I mean, he is playing, like, in majors, honestly, like, the best golfer in the world. The fact that he's getting top fives and top tens this steadily in the biggest events, it's like, that's the most impressive thing. You know how good he is, and he is so beloved, and everything that's gone on with Liv the last 2 years, and the role he's taken in the game, and how good he is at talking and being around people. Everyone wanted him to win this. Let's just call it what it is. I mean, the golf world, golf writers wanted him to win this. And I think it is just so disappointing that, and what makes it so strange is it's not like he's going out and choking. I mean, St. Andrews last year, right?
Yeah.
He didn't choke at St. Andrews. He just couldn't quite hit that, like, big birdie putt he needed to, and then Cam Smith took it from him.
Mm-hmm.
And that is kind of what happened today, too. He played well. I mean, other than maybe that 14th hole where he put that ball in the bunker and missed that putt, I think that was the one, obviously, that he let get away from him. But other than that, he hit fairways constantly. He drove the ball out of his mind. He put the ball on greens consistently, and he just could never make that, like, 15, 20-foot putt, that 10-foot putt for birdie. He just couldn't make any of them. And again, that's what I think it's not that he's losing it. It's that he's lacking that ability to just go grab it, to go take it. I know it's not that simple, but sometimes Wyndham Clark just went out and grabbed it and took it. I think that's what people are hoping for out of Rory McIlroy. And with Ricky, it is disappointing just because how much, and you were there, right?
Like, yeah,
that crowd wanted Ricky Fowler.
Like, absolutely.
That crowd was in love with him. They were chanting Ricky and other vulgar chants too. They loved him. And I think it's disappointing. It's tough though, because not like anyone expected him to win this, right? The fact that he's having this bounce back year and playing as well as he has all season long, really, that's enough of a big story for Ricky Fowler, I think, to have his game back. It is a bummer that the crowd didn't get a kind of embrace him, but I think Rory is who people will be talking about for the next, you know, few weeks.
You know, Brody, has the PGA Tour and Liv talk sort of cooled now? You had that initial, like, bombshell, and it was like kind of earth-shattering a little bit, and now it just seems like, for me, that the last 4 days, that wasn't the conversation. It wasn't the Liv Tour. It wasn't the PGA Tour. It was just the U.S. Open, and it came down to the final hole, which I think ultimately is what the fans want to see regardless.
No, you're totally right about that. I do think, and we all kind of wondered going into the week, like, how much will that be a distraction? I think the consensus was what happened, and you're right. It's when the balls start flying, it's just going to be, wow, we have a golf tournament. And I think you're right today, where people were able to enjoy it a little more, knowing there's no longer a war going. And I think that's been the case with most of the majors, that like we've been able to just enjoy them, but there was still that background, like, wow, Brooks Koepka won it for Liv and all that stuff. And I think this week it was like, oh, Cam Smith and Dustin Johnson are making runs, and Liv wasn't even really part of that storyline. And that is all in the, no matter your thoughts on the proposed, you know, joint venture and all that, and you're allowed to be angry about it, that is better for golf. I completely agree. But the sad, I don't know if sad's the right word, but the interesting thing will be that, yes, this was a great weekend of golf. Now it's going to go right back to being the main storyline because, you know, we are going to start getting more details about what it looks like. Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour, just had to step away with a health scare. The U.S. government, the Justice Department are going to be looking into whether this is violating antitrust issues and all of that. It's not going anywhere is the crazy thing. But, yeah, you're right. And as much as I said LACC was kind of a failure in some ways for the U.S. Open, we were fortunate to have a really great tournament, though, and a very fascinating result.
You know, Brody, I think always interesting for me is that when you look at when these tournaments sort of take place, obviously I'm talking about the majors, right, the Masters, you know, generally in April, right around Easter, right? Then you have the PGA Championship in May. Then in June, we have the U.S. Open on Father's Day. And then we know coming up next month, we'll have the Open Championship. Is there a way that golf can maybe try to spread these out a little bit more instead of just having them back to back to back? It's like, I was still recovering from Brooks's win at the PGA Championship, and then here we go. Here comes Wyndham 2 weeks later. It's like, it feels like everything is so rushed, and always felt like they could spread it out just a little bit when I feel like golf is starting to take that momentum back.
I think you're right that it's take the momentum back. And it's not a bad point, but yeah, it is kind of, it's happening rather rapidly. I don't think they will ever go away from the one a month thing. I think that's always just kind of worked for them. It's good for eyeballs and all that. But no, you're not wrong. I mean, the fact that, this week is the Travelers, which is, you know, whatever tournament most of the time, but it's an elevated event this week, as you know, which means all the best guys have to go. And that means Rory McIlroy just told this crushing defeat. Now he has to hop on a flight across the country to Connecticut to go play in a tournament that he probably doesn't want to play in. That is kind of a wild, you know, aspect. And as much as I don't think they'll go away from one major a month, and plus the PGA Tour and that doesn't even have control of that, I do think, you know, what happens in the next few weeks with when the schedule comes out for what this new joint venture looks like and what all that, that is going to be really interesting to see how they map out schedules, how they try to balance it out. So like you said, own the calendar more. And I think that's so important. I think, you know, and then you have the FedEx Cup, which will take over all of August, and that'll be the big thing. And fall golf is always just kind of an off season, if we're being really honest, with some small events. Do they try to spread things out and get more going in the fall? Does LIV become more of a fall concept or something? I don't know. But to answer your question, I don't think they'll ever change that, but I do think there's a conversation to be had.
We're speaking with golf and college football writer for The Athletic, Brody Miller. You can reach him on Twitter at Brody A. Miller. You mentioned that fall golf is probably not a thing because we know what's coming up in the fall. College football, Brody. We already know what's going on. And I was talking to the guys a little bit earlier. I saw something over the weekend, and it didn't look right. It didn't feel right, but you know what's happening. And I saw USC recruits taking pictures in the USC uniform without the Pac-12 logo, but with the Big Ten logo. Like, ooh. It's starting to hit me that in one more season, this is like the last college football season upcoming of, I guess, in its purest form before we got to get used to realignment as we head into this college football season, which obviously is the next one up, the next big season that's going to start. What are your top storylines as we start to prepare for the 2023 college football season?
Ooh, yeah, it's tough, because so many of the biggest stories of college football, like you said, are what are coming in 2025 or 2024 and how it's going to change. This season, though, it's going to be – I mean, I'm all in on this year because two of the programs, right, that I think we all collectively assume are top five teams, the defending champs, Georgia, Alabama, those are two programs that are in rebuild – not rebuild, but they're reshuffling.
Yeah.
I mean, they're losing both the quarterback, both coordinators – on both schools, and you know, I think that's undervalued how much continuity matters in college football and how much, hey, it's okay to lose one of those things. And I assume both those teams are going to be really good because guess what? They're Bama and Georgia, right? But that's not going to be just some simple thing. I think both those teams lose at least one game this year, maybe two.
Wow.
What happens with the LSUs? You know, a team that is very deep, is very experienced, has some really top-tier talent, some guys coming up. You know, is that experience more valuable than the talent of an Alabama, even though they're, you know, more inexperienced, things like that? I think that's, you know, the juicy thing to me, but also that quarterback race. So Caleb Williams and Drake May, I want to watch that. All the eyeballs on Caleb Williams this year, but don't forget about Drake May. So I think those are the things that really jump out to me.
Last question before I let you go, Brody. We just saw Wyndham Clark take the big tournament, right, the U.S. Open. He's like the big star now that everyone's going to be talking about. When we get to the upcoming college football season, outside of Caleb Williams and Drake May, who I've both seen play, who is that big star that you think no one's talking enough about but could have a huge, huge season and everyone's talking about him at the end of the year?
Ooh, should we have some fun and go defense? I think I'll go Mason Smith and Harold Perkins at LSU on defense. I mean, Mason Smith's the guy who should be this year's, you know, Jordan Davis or this year's Jalen Carter. He is a 6'6", 300-pound freak, and he was going to become it last year, and then the first half of the first game of the year tore his ACL. I mean, that guy could be a top-five pick if all goes right, and I think he's going to be a big name. And the world already fell in love with Harold Perkins last year, but now they're going to really follow it because they know him. I think Harold Perkins, what they do with him, he's moving inside linebacker. He is one of the most explosive players in the country. I think I'm really just excited to watch those guys play on top of, you know, some other guys maybe on the offensive side of the ball.
Oh, man, I can't wait. I can't wait. Gotta wait. Oh, can August get here? Finally, Brody. Mm-hmm. All right. Please.
So soon, man.
Hey, Brody, I appreciate the time, man. Good to talk to you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Take care.
All right. That's the golf and college football writer for The Athletic, Brody Miller. Reach him on Twitter at Brody A. Miller. I'm so excited about college football. He mentioned Perkins from LSU, man. The dude, I'm just giving you a little heads up. Has some, should I whisper this? Because TJ gets all excited. He's got some Micah Parsons-esque kind of skill set. I know. I'm just saying he's that kind of player. So be interesting to see him. But, you know, we talked a little bit about the U.S. Open. I just got a couple more things on that before we get off of the U.S. Open. I got my top 10 takeaways, my top 10 takes.
I like it.
From this past weekend at the LACC. And you know what? We're going to go over that coming up next right here on The Rich Eisen Show. Kirk Morrison filling in for Rich.
The average on-farm income in the United States was a loss of $1,100. 60% of U.S. pork comes from one company wholly owned by the Chinese. And farmers are more likely to commit suicide than veterans. Folks, we got a problem. I'm Lucinda, 8th-generation farmer and founder of Moink. Moo plus oink. We offer grass-fed and grass-finished beef and lamb, pastured pork and chicken, and wild-caught Alaskan salmon, shipped straight from the heart of rural America. Come stand shoulder to shoulder with us by putting the family farm at the center of your supper table. What's in it for you? You mean besides saving the family farm and enjoying the highest quality meat on God's green earth? Geez, want me to hang the moon for you too? I'd love to.
Go to moinkbox.com/yum right now and get a free gift in your first order.
Get to getting while the getting is good.
Go to moinkbox.com/yum. Moinkbox.com/yum.
I guarantee you're fixing to say, oink, oink, I'm just so happy I got moinked.
For decades, Rolling Stone has set the bar for entertainment publications. Today, Rolling Stone Music Now takes over in podcast form. Songwriter and producer Jamie Hartman reacts to the Ed Sheeran verdict.
You need to create something new, and of course you're going to use traditional paths to get there. Are you going to sue the Rolling Stones for making a samba out of Sympathy for the Devil? You're going to sue Elvis Presley for writing Bossa Nova? It's like saying you're not allowed to use a pencil to create a piece of art.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
Then I went to Frederick, Maryland.
Okay.
Frederick Keyes.
Frederick Keyes,
and they
Maryland.
Made these bobbleheads, of which this is one of...
Oh, my God, a Shooter McGavin bobblehead.
Shooter McGavin bobblehead. Yes. So,
guys, awesome. Yeah, here it is.
Amazing. There it is.
We'll have to place this in a very special spot here.
It's pretty funny. He's got the guns out, double barrels, leaning on his putter. It's pretty funny.
Isn't this amazing? Did you realize when you were doing that, Happy Gilmore, that would be something that would stick with you for the rest of your
career? No idea. I don't think anybody knows when they make a movie if it's going to, you know, have legs like this. When it first came out, it was a moderate hit, but now,
right,
people love it and quote it.
But it's neat that you own this Shooter McGavin thing. Some other actors, I think, might not do that.
Well, yeah, I enjoyed the movie. I was a joy working with Adam and Dennis Dugan, these wonderful writers, and, you know, it's just Judd Apatow was a co-writer, and these guys are, you know, comedy gold. So
right.
To be with them and to have this movie last as long as it has, it's opened a lot of doors up for me, you know, personally and
sure,
and professionally. So it's just been a gas.
And did you come up with the shooting?
Yeah, I had no idea why they called him Shooter. Nobody told me anything, so I just started making putts and going, Shooter.
But so there was your call.
That was my call. And the very funny thing about this movie, I've told this story, but forgive me if I've told you before.
It's okay, go for it.
End of the movie. You know how I hate in a golf movie where they cut to the hole and the ball rolls in? I want to say, could you please let me make it? It's about a 32-footer. Mm-hmm. And it's not on a golf green. It's on a botanical garden. So he told me he'd give me like 7 tries. And that's try 5. And I lifted out twice. But people were betting. The crew was going, yeah, we got to do this. And so you see who your friend is? And when I put that baby in there and I did choke on that baby, and I just did that whole Shooter shimmy thing at the end.
That's amazing.
That's the one they left in the movie, and it's so freaking wrong.
Fantastic. Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. So my U.S. Open euphoria is about to end. I'm trying to just keep it all into this last segment as I turn the page, right? Just like Bill Belichick says, it's on to the next sport, or it's on to the next, right? I have to get excited about the NBA draft this week.
You're on Cincinnati.
Yeah. Think about it. The NBA draft is this week. No one's talking about it, right?
Well, it starts at pick two, right?
I guess. But it's like, you know, the NFL has set such a high bar for the drafts, man. It's just, you know, we talk draft for like 2 months, and it is like really like exciting. Guys moving up.
Mock draft.
Part three. Outside of Victor Wembanyama, I don't like Scoot Henderson.
Brandon Miller. Those are the only three.
After that, couldn't tell you. So I have to rely on Big Perk to tell me, I like this guy. He's an inside-outside player. That's it. That's all everybody said. I like this guy. He's going to be there. And then I just don't.
You might want to get more than one opinion, though, on these.
Yeah, I get more and more opinions. So,
no, I'm saying more than just Big Perk.
That's what I'm going to be. I got to watch, you know, the coverage on Thursday. After Victor Wembanyama, it's just, okay, who gets traded, who doesn't? They're trying to give some, you know, information. You got, like, the battle between Shams and Woj going on. Like, that's really what the NBA draft is about. Who's got more information? Who's more plugged in on the inside?
Who tips the picks quickest?
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's all about that. Yeah.
You see, speaking of Shams, he reported this morning that Draymond opted out of his $27.5 million contract.
Did.
So now he's a player option.
Golden State Warriors, four-time NBA champion Draymond Green, which we already knew he was going to decline the option because it's just a one-year deal. So you decline the option because I want more guaranteed money, but more importantly, I want extended years. I got a new general manager in Mike Dunleavy Jr., who I believe that they did play together at one point. Yeah, I think at the end of the Dunleavy Jr. This is before the Warriors were. And my air quotes, the Warriors.
Why'd you air quote that?
Why'd I air quote? Because, you know, I've been a fan for a long, long time. And so people think that the Warriors just came about in 2017. No, like I'm still one of the, you know, I still thought we should have kept Monte Ellis over Steph Curry. And you know, obviously that was one of my worst takes.
Monte
Ellis. I'm one of the worst takes ever. Hey, but that just goes to show you my fandom.
Monte can score.
Right. That just shows you my fandom. Like, here's this dude who can't keep his ankles together, and yet Monte's giving us buckets.
Yeah, I remember that too, Kirk. A lot of people don't because, you know, when Steph came into the league, he did have those ankle injuries, and it seemed to like, I can't remember if he really did get hurt every year, but it seemed like every time you heard, oh, yeah, he hurt his ankle again. Yeah. So no one could have predicted that the current Steph Curry that we had
and at Davidson,
was going to exist based upon how he started.
Well, you remember, too, at Davidson, Steph Curry wore that, like, XXX jersey, it seemed like. So he looked like he was, like, 9 years old playing college basketball. And then he gets to the NBA, you're like, how's this young high schooler going to be able to – and he's grown into his NBA body, and he's actually a lot taller than people give him credit for. I stood next to him. I'm like, okay, you're kind of tall, Steph. He's actually more like in the 6'2", 6'3", kind of rangy, more so than when he looks on the court around all these guys who's 6'10", 6'11", he looks a little shorter.
Monta Ellis, from 09 to 2011, 25.5. And then 24 a game. He could pour it.
He was a bucket. So that's what I'm looking forward to this week. We'll see what the NBA draft. And we got Howard Beck coming up in the next hour as well. So he can talk about I feel like Kevin Durant is just wants to play with everybody in the league at some point. I just saw the list of players that have actually played with Kevin Durant as a teammate. The list keeps going and going. But I got a list I wanted to get to. Here's my top 10.
Here's my list.
My top 10 takeaways from the U.S. Open. You ready?
Come on, Kurt. Let's go.
All right, here we go. Put the list up. Whew. All right, they're coming up real quick. Number one. This is
No. You don't start with number one, Kurt.
No. Well, the first one.
Start. Okay. Gotcha.
I don't have a. This is just my 10 takeaways.
It's not a top 10.
Okay. Here's 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. No, there's a bunch. So, number one. I had on my list, not number one, but just one of them. I saw a lot of people this weekend, And one of them I was reminded of when I walked into the studio today. Because when you go to big events, you're always like, man, this is so cool. And we take pictures to remember it always, right? But then you always realize when you walk by the gift shop, the memorabilia shop.
Gear guy.
You got to be souvenir guy. And souvenir guy, as soon as I walked in, was Chris Brockman over here.
Yeah.
He's souvenir guy. He's got his 123rd edition, the U.S. Open sweatshirt on. And so for me, I end up spending a lot more than I want to because
so much.
I ended up bringing my daughter and my daughter and my youngest son on Friday. They got done. It was on the way home. And I had a little entrance at the U.S. Open, which shall remain nameless, Mike Del Tufo. Don't tell everybody my entrance that I went in. But it was a, you know, kind of a hidden entrance that I brought the kids through. We walked in and, you know, had a little family time. My daughter says, don't take me back. It is too much walking. But I told her we're going to the gift shop, their faces lit up. So took them to the gift shop and bought her a shirt, bought bag tags. We bought everything. Oh, yeah. So I was souvenir guy.
Nice.
And that's one of the big takeaways is that when you go into like a gift shop, even on vacations, anywhere you go, you always need something to hold on to that memory. I think I overdid it at the gift shop. Souvenir guy. So that's the one thing I have on my list of 10 things here.
Too much money.
Next thing is the reference to Lionel Richie's house.
Oh, my gosh.
How many times did they reference Lionel Richie's house?
8,000.
Oh, right. Lionel Richie's house. Wait, on
that's
Lionel
Richie's house?
Yeah, that really is his house. Yeah, on the LAC. Which, it's kind of funny because I did read up on, I guess, the initial fee or the member's fee to actually...
It's like $250 to $300.
$250 to $300 to get in. But they don't accept celebrities.
No entertainers.
No entertainers.
Yep.
So Lionel Richie is right there on hole four, but yet he's a celebrity. He can't be a part of the golf course.
Can't play.
Can't play. He can go out on his back in his balcony. Yeah. He can go out on the patio.
Wait a second.
Cheer the guys up. Yes.
Time out.
Yes.
That's Lionel Richie's house.
Yeah.
That is Lionel in fire. Lionel Richie dancing on the ceiling.
Yes.
That's his crib, and yet he and the Commodore. Go in his backyard and
he
play.
He can't walk down can't on his and go play. Can't go play.
Can't go play.
Yo, that seems racist to me. Oh,
no. It's just no celebrities. It is a non-celebrity.
No celebrity.
It's racist against celebrities.
So, Hugh Hefner, the Playboy Mansion is right up against the 13th green and the 14th tee. Mm-hmm. You can still hear the monkeys and the birds and stuff while you tee off on 14. Hugh Hefner tried to become a member at LACC forever, and they wouldn't let him in.
Wow.
Told him
That's crazy.
Told him, off that fence, I'd be playing at
so
night.
So he said,
right?
Oh, no, you won't let me in? Watch this.
Cool, I'm going to get more animals.
And he got, animals over there on the 13th tee.
Yeah. So was Lionel there? Was he peeping from the balcony?
I'm not sure. Him and the Commodore.
They didn't show him, but they mentioned his house every single commercial.
I think he's on tour right now.
Okay.
He left. Dancing on the ceiling.
The third takeaway, number three, or one of the things I also noticed, when did golf turn into suites? Like, when did the suites and the seating, when I grew up and when I just watching golf was always about people along the fairways and along the greens and you would be rows. And I remember back in 2009, I remember when I was at the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines, it was... Same thing. People, you walk the greens and you had all of this open space. Now, it was like the suites. And what really bothered me the most was that I was not in one. I was not in the suites. Yeah. But the crazier part was that I had my transistor radio in. Shout out to my guy, Taylor Zarzer, and the coverage that the guys over at SiriusXM had. The people in the suites or the grandstands and all of that, the suites actually had a television.
Yeah.
So you could always hear them saying, oh, and then everybody's looking around like, what happened? And I have the transistor radio in my ear. So I'm telling the people who are next to me who don't have any idea. I was like, oh, Rory just missed a birdie putt. Or, oh, Wyndham Clark just hit bogey. Yeah. So I'm just thinking like the whole suite thing, I get it at the Waste Management in Phoenix. That's like the whole 16 is the... You know,
part three. Going crazy.
Yeah, it's a party hole, but that's what I think the USGA is now moving towards. Now they're moving toward this more corporate suite situation, which also leads into my other sort of takeaway from this weekend, guys, was that everyone says, "Oh, there wasn't a lot of fan interaction or a lot of fans." Well, I said this: look, you're in Los Angeles. Los Angeles actually. You're used to this. The U.S. Open is huge, but LA is used to having World Series, NBA Finals, Stanley Cup, big events, the Grammys, American Music Awards. So when it comes to events, people are like, oh, there was nobody, there was no Rockets fans, because we know how to behave. You know, we know how to act at big events. So that's another takeaway that I have. Another one that I have is, isn't it always cool now that you just know that the U.S. Open is probably the best Father's Day event?
Always. So
I kept thinking about, like, think about events that you can, like, go with your dad. You know what I mean? Father, grandfather, all that. It's a great event for Father's Day weekend, right? How many times I just watched every, you know, watched all the guys, and you saw, you know, the matching hats and polo shirts and the, you know, dads with their sons. I thought it was a cool event. And I think when I think of Father's Day weekend sporting event, U.S. Open is like top tier, right? When I think of now Easter, around Easter, I'm always thinking of, obviously, the Masters is right around that time. But I can't really think of a lot of events that kind of correlate with a special
There's
day.
There's been a lot of big NBA Finals moments.
Yeah, Finals Day, Michael Jordan,
MJ,
with the basketball.
When it beating the Sonics and finally getting over the hump. So usually sometimes, like you said, there would have been a Game 7 on Sunday had Miami been able to push Denver. But, yeah, U.S. Open, Father's Day, lock it in. It's every single year. It's so special.
Yeah. Another one here on my list. Make sure you just schedule a recovery day. For a lot of people who are listening and the people who are watching, I do have shorts on underneath the desk.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm on recovery day. I walked a lot. I got my steps in.
What do you got? What do you got for numbers?
I don't have
Check back the week.
I will click back. I will do that during the break. I will give you my numbers at, but I got some steps in.
Gotta be 20,000 plus.
Oh my God.
Right?
Easily. Yeah. Steps were steps. I was stepping. Okay. I was stepping. I'll just say like that. So I got my steps in, got a lot of exercise, and was great with the cloud coverage earlier in the tournament compared to like the last Saturday and Sunday when that cloud coverage was over. It was just cold. It was too hot. Another one here on my takeaways from the U.S. Open. Wyndham is not just a hotel. He is now a major champion. Think about that. And there actually is a Wyndham actual tournament, the Wyndham Championship.
Yep.
And Wyndham Clark has actually missed the cut twice, and he tied for 81st. So now the Wyndham Championship takes on bigger significance, and I think it's actually upcoming. It hasn't happened yet. So in August, Wyndham Clark could be playing in the Wyndham Championship. Think about how cool that is.
Man, this dude missed the cut in 4 of 6 majors that he previously played in. Wins on his 7th. Unreal.
That's how unreal goes. You just need one good weekend.
Everything's rolling. All the luck goes your way.
A couple more for you here. I was by Golf Guy. So I was standing by Golf Guy. I was on the 10th hole, and I just happened to be standing there. And Patrick Harrington, he hit one, and you always see it on TV when it happens, but I saw it live in person where the ball actually hit somebody. And the guy was, I mean, it barely tapped him, but it hit him, and he was like, oh, but I saw how the officials, they come over and they mark the ball and they spread everybody around, like, no, scoot out of the way, get out of the way. And then Harrington's, his caddy comes over, hey, give us a little more, he needs a little more room. So now I'm pushed all the way, but I still got a nice little sight view of what's about to happen. He's about to take a shot. But I happen to be standing behind Golf Guy, who's with his lady. So Golf Guy, you already know, he does all he can do is lay up right here. So he's probably just going to hit it over here in the fairway just to give him a nice little shot. Probably try to save par.
Just mansplaining everything he's mansplaining, that's happening.
And she's like eating it up. She's like, oh, okay, cool, okay. And all Harrington does, comes over, I think he grabs, I want to say he grabbed maybe like a 7 or a 6, comes over. Now, this is how I know I'm just a bad golfer, because for me, I probably would have did what Golf Guy was saying. And yet, these are true professionals. Harrington hits one up onto the green from this almost obstructed view that he had. He gets it up on the green. Now he's trying to shoot for birdie. And so Golf Guy is totally wrong. And that's why you don't listen to golf. Like, oh, man, yeah, that was I didn't see that. And I was like, yeah, Golf Guy. Relax, Golf Guy. But I just thought that was funny, because Golf Guy was really trying to impress his lady. And He just was just flat out wrong.
So. Hey, whatever works.
Last one here. This is what I, last one here. And this is my final takeaway. After seeing some players hit and after watching a lot of the guys on Thursday and Friday who actually missed the cut, I'm not as bad as a golfer as I really thought. Look, I'm not Rory McIlroy. I'm not Scottie Scheffler. I'm not a, but I'm also not as bad as, and my guy Xander Schauffele yesterday. I was also, again, I was on hole number 10. He almost had a snowman. He triple bogeyed. He did some things that I'm like, that's not a, I do that. Like, yeah, you're not supposed to triple bogey. I triple bogeyed a couple
Dustin
times.
Dustin Johnson had a snowman on one of the holes.
Hole two on third on Friday. Yeah. Yes.
Like, what?
He had an eight.
Yeah.
So I know I'm not the greatest golfer, but I also saw some shots this weekend and said, hey, I could have done that. And that's it. Those were my takeaways from
good.
The
I like it. Any US Open. The only other question I have, sure. You hit at everything. It's so cool you were out there every day. Mm-hmm. Any big celeb sightings? What were the big? You see anybody walking around? I saw Larry Fitzgerald on the broadcast. They were showing some of the guys who were out there walking around.
Yeah. One of my good friends is Manolo Vega. Manolo teaches golf. I hung out with him for a little bit. He is a riot.
Yeah, that dude's hilarious.
He is hilarious. And, you know, he's you're around him and some of the other guys in the TV compound area, right? There's like a lot of TV guys that you see. But the one thing about, and this is what I was saying about this tournament and moving forward, is like when you come to golf, you just come as you are. You're just an ordinary person. Mm-hmm. Like there is no courtside seats. There are no behind the catcher, you know, behind home plate.
Nope.
There is no like, hey, look at me, I'm here. It's not about what you wear. It's not about
Marlins man isn't walking around.
Right.
The US Marlins fan.
He probably was there. Marlins guy in his jersey. Like, you don't have that, right? It's just everybody just coming to enjoy. I feel like it's just a level playing field of people who enjoy being out on a, you know, Saturday or Sunday, walking the greens, having a good time. So I enjoyed that part of it as well. And I think moving forward, I wish there were like other events like that, you know what I mean? Just outside of golf, maybe, because I know the U.S. Open's coming up for tennis, but you got to have, you know, you got to have tickets for that.
You got to have the
Well, Wimbledon is coming up too, right?
Wimbledon's next.
Coming up when it comes to tennis. So those are like little things that now, like there's more events that I still got to check off the bucket list. I need to get to the Masters. I want to get to the Masters. I haven't been to the U.S. Open in New York, so I want to go there. I was actually near Wimbledon, but I didn't go. Actually was on a layover in London. And everybody's like, are you like, you see the black guy in the airport, they're like, are you here for Wimbledon? No, I'm not here for Wimbledon. I'm just passing through, man. I'm on a connection flight, you know what I mean? So but it was a good weekend. And now
great sports weekend.
I shift over towards, in my free time now, I tend to start looking at NFL stuff. I'm starting to get my schedule, get my calendar together. We know when the preseason games are. I know when obviously the training camps are now starting. So we're putting the schedule together. I'm going to go to about four or five training camps, start to see some of these teams and get ready for the long haul of a season of what we're doing. But I know it was something that we talked about a little bit earlier, and I'll bring it up here, but there's something that certain NFL players do, and it just drives me crazy because the fans just love it. They just love it. And every time I see it, I'm like, he's just doing this for a reason. And I'll tell you what I'm talking about coming up next, right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Kirk Morrison filling in for Rich.
The cat sat on the
Get an inside look at Hollywood with Michael Rosenbaum. Actress Kristen Ritter.
Your parents let you travel by yourself.
It was a different time.
They just put you on a train. As a 15-year-old girl, you went to New York.
I went on a bus, and I did get picked up at Port Authority. They thought I was a runaway.
What would they do?
They'd detain you and, like, get people on the phone, and then they finally let you go to your modeling job.
But how many times did it happen?
Once or twice.
It just seems like it wouldn't happen.
It happens, yeah.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Wherever you listen.
Just a real basic question. What the hell were you thinking? What are you doing out there?
You know, just tackling a challenge that most wouldn't do.
I would say. Why? Why'd you do it?
Just trying out my new booster package that I was working on this year. For me, though, it's literally like, would you rather live and die? Mm-hmm. Would you rather die and never live? So when I jumped it the first time, everybody started like cheering and yelling. I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. And then I did it the second time. And then I heard this word, El Saltador, El Saltador. And I didn't know what that means. I left that one day. And then I started hearing that through the streets. And I was like, okay, whatever. And came back the second day, did it again. And they stopped the music and everything.
Get out of here.
Just started yelling that in the stands.
To you?
To me. Like me now, I'm a football player here in the States.
Sure.
Correct?
Yes, sir.
They don't know me from Adam House.
Josh Norman is not out there in Pamplona.
When I get there,
yeah.
And they started chanting that name. So I'm like a hero in Spain almost. Not even back here.
Hold on a second.
It's bananas.
Let me get this down so I can use this on any host of shows this NFL season. El Satador?
Yes, yeah, it's like the jumper.
El Satador.
Like the matador?
Yes.
Like the matador is like the jumper. So
I would love just 1 second in my life to have the words El Satador chanted to me.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, Kirk Morrison here, filling in for Rich. And it is that time of year. It is a time of year where it gets on my nerves a little bit. But a lot of us, I would say football fans, you get thirsty for content. There is no content right now. There is no content. All football players, we just had Marlon Humphrey on. He told you, I'm on vacation. I'm relaxing. Probably, you know, we have Jeffrey Simmons coming up in about 12 minutes at the top of the hour. We'll talk to him. Jeffrey Simmons, a defensive tackle, one of the highest paid defensive tackles.
Just got paid,
yes, for the Tennessee Titans. We'll talk to him about how does he, you know, go about the offseason and now the little time off before training camp starts. But, you know, you get away from football, you get away from a little bit, but it also is time now. For the I won't call them thirst traps, I call them workout traps. How about that? Workout traps. That's the new thing, where a player, NFL player, will show a video or post a video of them working out. And I've seen, because I like to look at the message boards, you know, different fan pages or team fan pages. And how excited people look, like, oh, my God, look at him working out. He looks great. And then they forget all about it coming up. But there's one player who just posted one, and you hate to give it the, you know, sort of the publicity, but I can't help it. Because I feel like he's the guy that we continue to just, either you're a fan or you're not. I'm a fan of his game. But sometimes what he does off the field is just, but the video circulating around the internet or around the web or the Spider-Verse is Russell Wilson. And look, it's a good workout. I mean, but it's showing him doing on the slide board. It's showing him doing all of his workouts and movements. I will say he does look like a much more in shape, more leaner looking Russell Wilson. But he's doing his workouts, and I just go straight to the comments a lot of times. This was posted on the @DangerRussWilson. And you tend to look at the comments and they're all the Broncos fans. Oh, comeback season. Here he is. And I think it is Russell Wilson who hashtags. What did he hashtag, Brockman?
Restoration season.
Restoration season. Comeback season.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know.
Restoration Hardware, good place.
That's what I said. Restoration Hardware. That's the first thing that comes to my mind. Actually got valet parking here in L.A., by the way. Restoration Hardware. But I can't think of, like, when Russell Wilson posts stuff like this, you know, I think he has to take the place of the look at me guy of the NFL. One of them retired. Great, good guy, and J.J. Watt. Remember, J.J. Watt would post his pictures, and all everybody's like, oh, my God, look at J.J. Watt. He's ready. You know, he's going to take this league over this year. Same with Russell Wilson. He's the guy that looks at, you know, tends to go out and say, oh, I'm just being me. I'm just being me. Mm-hmm. But people eat it up. Fans eat it up. I've seen fans look at players who show workout videos and, oh, man, he's dialed in. But we just talked to Marlon Humphrey. Says, yeah, I work out in the morning. I do my own thing. I don't need a trainer. I just work out. I'll be ready to go. Football season comes around, but I got other things to do, right? I got other time to lay down, relax, get my mind away from football. But I always laugh at the fans' reaction when their players or favorite players post a video of them working out. And I say, that's what players are actually supposed to be doing, you know? So if I post a workout, it's just posting a workout. Like, oh, my God, look at him. He's lifting weights. Like, duh, he's going to lift weights. He's running because he's going to be running come fall. Like, he's sprinting. Oh, my God. This is what you do. This is NFL offseason. This is what happens. The focus should be more on get some time away. Clear the mind. I'm not saying going on one of these darkness retreats like Aaron Rodgers, but – always reflect on my own career, and I always thought about the time that you have to get away from football to truly love it. Because people always ask me, man, how much do you miss it? It's like, oh, I miss the locker room. But this is a part of the NFL that guys will tell you, you question it. You question your love for football when you get to training camp because you just want to play games. But it's the preparation that leads you up to that part. So you need to take away, refresh, get your mind right, understand why you're doing it, what you're doing it. Everyone has different reasons of why they do it. But you take that time away. And for me, it was always 4th of July. When 4th of July came, that was it. It's over. It is all football. Like LeBron used to call it Zero Dark 30. That's what it is. Don't talk to me. Don't bother me. It is, I am getting ready and preparing myself to play football all the way until right around President's Day weekend. But never made the playoffs, so I was usually done around New Year's. So. never made the playoffs in about 8 years.
Your season was 5 months on the nose.
It was like, man, 1, 2, 3, Cancun? Yeah, that was me. So you learn a lot along the way. That's the hard part, I think, about people. I mean, the hard part about the sacrifice is that no matter how much effort, hard work that you put into, like we put a show together, everyone puts their pieces in and we're all a part of this together. And we make a great show. You do a great show. In the NFL, you can do all the hard work, all the studying, all of the weightlifting and all of that. And yet you can go out on Sunday and lose a football game. Yep. That was the hardest part for me. I remember the first game that we lost. I was a rookie. First game, lost to Tom Brady and the Patriots. I go into the locker room.
You weren't alone. Everyone lost.
Yeah, I know.
I was going to say, a lot of people.
But I remember going into the locker room, and I was in, like, real tears. Like, I was like, and had one of my vets come up and slap me up. I said, boy, get out of here, man. I can't cry over spilled milk. That game over with. And that's what kind of whipped me into shape into the National Football League. Hey, you can't cry over what already has happened. Only thing that you can do is move forward. The only thing that you can do is be better the next game. Because if you're worried about last game, you've already lost the game ahead. And it's those moments that you take and you move on. And then guess what? They become metaphors for life. So I tell my son, hey, I don't care you failed that test. Guess what? You better get an A on the next one. That's just how it is. Metaphors for life you learn in the National Football League.
Conspiracy theories, paranormal,
UFOs.
Science teacher Andrew Greenwood stated that a child ran into his classroom and was hysterically screaming and talking about the flying saucer outside.
Hundreds of children ran out of their classrooms to go outside and see this unidentified flying object that was just above the school.
Just imagine a bunch of kids running out of school. Most of them probably just ran home.
Theories of the Third Kind on YouTube or wherever you listen.